Doug Bernier.
Well, thank you very much. Pleasure to be here, and I hope you're enjoying yourself. We're going to be talking about AM today, AM broadcasting. You remember AM? Amplitude modulation. There's an Atwater, Kent, and that is a tombstone. I'm sorry, that's a cathedral, thank you. And that's a tombstone, getting ahead. And remember when everyone used to gather around the radio in the evening and the family would listen to drama? Exciting time. The Lone Ranger, Fibber McGee and Molly. Well, things started to change though, and primarily with the advent of FM, although it took a while for FM to get established, but once it did, people started listening to FM. And it really started to change. Here's a fellow that is back from the hippie days, and he's got those earphones on listening to radio. And here's the nice modern picture. I'm wondering how big her ears are. But, so that's the story. But what happened to AM? Well, its listenership did not do as we expected. It dropped considerably. AM is our oldest broadcast service. It's a part of our culture, the American culture, and it has a unique set of excellent programs for the local community and most communities. They are the voice of the community. Local talk, news, foreign languages, sports. But AM has its limitations. There's less fidelity, of course, and they have to compete with other sources of media, including satellite and MP3s and you name it. They're all out there now, and AM has to compete, let alone with FM. In 1978, more than half of all listening was to AM. In 2010, listenership to AM has dropped to 17%. And from 1990 to 2010, 197 AM stations quit the air, while FM, during that time, almost doubled. So for AM, times have changed. So the FCC came out with a docket in October 2013, and their interest was in rejuvenating AM broadcast. And, not that kind of rejuvenation. Well, not that kind either. I'm sorry, I got these slides mixed up here, I guess. This is the kind of rejuvenation it would probably take. But, you know, you don't want to throw away good money for bad. So the FCC proposed a number of changes. And the first one that they proposed was changing the rules for cross-service media for FM for AM stations, which were not allowed. Actually, this happened in 2009 is when that happened. And the old rules were changed about that time to allow translators for AM stations to be licensed. And you had the issue of the 60 dBU contour. I think I'm going to step over here. And the 60 dBU under the old rules had to cross the 60 dBU of where you place the new translator. And the Mattoon waiver came about, which allows stations to move further than the cross of the 60 dBU contour. However, you could not move them so far that they would not be mutually exclusive, the new location from the old. So in the Mattoon waiver, there could be no history of band hopping, and you had to have a 4-year holding period for that AM translator, for the FM, for the AM. So the new rules were adopted in October of 2015, and they created a 6-month window, an application window for Class C and D stations, and they allowed stations to move translators. They didn't create new ones, but they allowed stations to move translators up to 250 miles. And you could use any available channel to where you moved it. And the commission said that, all right, it has to be within the 2 millivolt per meter contour of the AM station. That's the 2 millivolt is a pretty standard contour. And it has to be within 25 miles of the transmitter, whichever is the smaller, whichever is the lesser distance. And then they said that they would open a 2 to 3 month window for all classes, which would include the Class Bs and supposedly the Class A stations. That window is still open, and it will close at the end of this month. And the commission, last of all, said that in terms of FM translators for AM stations, that they'll open a new window in 2017, where if you didn't get in the first windows, you could get into that one and actually apply for a new translator and not have to move one. So this is a graph here of the coverage of the 2 millivolt per meter contour of WOI in black. And we moved their translator from Iowa City, where the station translator had a construction permit, 108.5 miles, well within the 250 mile maximum. And we created in that red contour the 60 dBU to cover Ames, Iowa. And that's also, you can see, within the 25 mile limit. And of course, it would qualify to be in the lesser of those two. The FCC also, in the docket, changed the daytime coverage rules. They modify them to, from the previous rule of 5 millivolt per meter, and the 5 millivolt per meter had to actually incorporate 80% of the principal city, or POP. And they changed that to 50%. So that's a reduction of the requirement to be where you are. And that's very important, particularly as the boundaries of cities enlarge and the property that you have gets more expensive to be at that location. AM tends to take up a lot of space. And for new stations, the change was from 100% to 80%, and that also included city of license moves. The nighttime coverage changed as well. The rule was that 80% of the community or area had to be covered with the nighttime interference free contour, the NIF, which is the contour that many stations have that has been reduced by the interference that they receive. And that contour, once it's established, had to cover that 80% of the community at night. And now the new rules are, for existing stations, that there are no rules for nighttime coverage to the city of license. That's a very important move for stations that want nighttime facilities and can't get them because they could never come up to the percentage that they need to provide to the city. And the rule then went to 50% for new stations or those changing the community of license. So they at least had to stay in the 50% range or above. And the ratchet rule was eliminated. What is the ratchet rule? Well, that was the rule that was instituted by the Federal Communications Commission back in 1991. In their dockets to improve AM radio. And the idea was that if you make a change in your facilities, then you would have to reduce by 10% your contribution to the NIF of other stations. So that was a way to reduce interference as time went on. However, one of the problems with this is that it prevented stations from increasing their coverage at night, because if they did, they had to reduce it again. And this was particularly a problem for moving an AM tower multiplexing diplexing to another tower where you had to move your facility. But so to summarize what these did for the AM stations was to allow them to compensate for city boundary expansion. And I just read the other day about an AM station that just went silent because their property was worth more than the station, and they would do better by just turning off the station and selling the property and tearing down the towers to a shopping center or whatever. So AM is kind of bleeding in that respect. To try to find a site out of the city has used to have the issues of city coverage, and that's been reduced for the daytime and eliminated for night. But that's harder to do than it says for a number of reasons, including covenants of tower restrictions, the Environmental Protection Agency's rules, which are fairly onerous with regard to protecting the environment. So that became some issue, and those rules were designed to help AM. Another thing that those rules passed was the MDCL, the use of modulation-dependent carrier level. Basically, when the carrier, when the audio goes to silence, even during normal speech, the carrier will drop, and it's instantaneous, and apparently not noticed by listeners. And the FCC had allowed this on an experimental basis because it appeared to have been able to save a lot of power consumption. 20 to 40% of your power on an AM station can be saved by using carrier dependent level. And the requirements used to be that you used to have to get experimental authority and then submit to the commission on a regular basis reports. That's been done away with in the recent docket. And now it's all you have to do is send the FCC a letter. The antenna efficiency standards have been reduced by some 25%. And a further reduction may be allowed by some stations if the FCC approves it on an experimental basis. So what that does is allow for a lot more flexibility for AM stations to build a new facility in a new location. They don't need as much land. This is an example of one of the smaller form towers. I think this was probably about 65 feet, made by Valcom. And so they reduced the efficiency standard so that for smaller antennas, that works. The station that's on 800 kilohertz that wants to move and duplex into a tower that's a 1600 foot quarter wave can do this now because the efficiency standard of that for that requirement has been reduced. Here's the comparison of the old rules versus the current rules. You can see that the effective field at 1 kilometer has reduced for all classes. And so the commission also proposed a further rulemaking. And they said that the Class A's are now protected on the co-channel to the 0.5 millivolt per meter, 50% sky wave. And they ask, should this be made to the 0.1 millivolt for contour, and that be a ground wave? Also, should the critical hour protections be eliminated for Class A stations? So they're asking for this input. And should the 1991 rules for calculating RSS values of the interfering field strength for the purpose of calculating NIF, should that be changed back to what it used to be before 1991 to the 50% exclusion method and only consider co-channel? The rule today considers first adjacent as well. So here's a comparison of the pre-1991 rules with the current rules being on the left. And one thing you see there is that the stations are protected to the 2 millivolt per meter contour by the 0.1 for co-channel. And the first adjacent channel is protected to the 2 millivolt per meter by the 0.5. And the third adjacent, this is the pre-rules, which is the ones that they're saying we're going to go back to, perhaps. There's a change to the 25 millivolt per meter contour protecting against the 25 millivolt per meter. And there is no third adjacent requirements where there used to be under the current rules. So the stations are being protected in a smaller way than under the current rules to the 2 millivolt per meter contour. Now here is a station that we did, and it's using our AM Pro software. And what you're seeing on the column here, what you're seeing in this column is the outgoing contour overlap. And here you're seeing the incoming contour overlap. Now you can't have any according to the rules. However, why does this station have all of that overlap? Well, that's because this station was built under the 1990 rules, and then the FCC came in and changed those to a more strict U-to-D ratio, and these ended up as having these overlaps. The overlaps were allowed, they were grandfathered, and if you change this facility, you can continue to have the overlaps, but you cannot increase them. So WBNS was one of 14 stations. We were contacted by the NAB to do a study for them for their submission to the FCC regarding the rejuvenation DACA. And one of the things that they did is they came out with a list of stations, and we came out with a list of our stations, and we put our heads together, and we ended up with a kind of a conglomeration of large stations and small, various regional areas, and a combination of 14 stations. So this is what happens if you look at the pre-rejuvenation rules. You're looking at the 2 millivolt per meter contour shown in red of this station, WBNS. And under the, we'll call them post the 1990 rules before rejuvenation occurred in that time, we're seeing that the population could, in this particular case, increase by a large percentage from 1.6 million to 2 million. Hard for me to see the commas from here. So that's one of the stations that we looked at, and we looked at the population in the new 2 millivolt per meter coverage, and this is with a 5 kilowatt transmitter. So this is the post-rejuvenation, or after the rejuvenation rules, where WBNS could go to 45 kilowatts, 43 kilowatts, and you can see that there are no overlaps at all under this new criteria, which is in fact the old criteria. So the commission has not fully moved or accepted this particular proposal, but they're probably getting pretty close to it. I imagine that we'll hear something in October about that. So if we could pass those sheets out, I have here the table that we did for the NAB on this project. Actually, there were two projects, and this is the first one that we did. So I'm going to go to the second slide, and I'd like to point out WBNS, which is on here. I'm going by rote here, I think. Is this BNS right there? Can you see it? One up. All right. So WBNS is originally 5 kilowatts, and it can move under this, the new rules, to 43 kilowatts. So their population can increase, we just talked about that, 23.2% on the new rules. The first, these three stations here, if we go back to that slide, doesn't seem to work going back. Well, these three stations here are the stations that are most affected by this increase to 43 kilowatts. So the question that we had was, how will this power increase affect other stations, particularly those that are closest in terms of the production they must provide the station and vice versa? And you can see here that the first station here, I could probably see over, I don't know how well you can read it, but if you've got this, the handout, you can read it off of the handout. This is the second page. WBNS then has WABQ, WMBA, and WJCP as the three stations that they must protect perhaps the most. And you can see that WABQ can go, if you look at the next column, studied column, can go to 1 kilowatt. It's already 1 kilowatt, so it doesn't increase, but it can increase because of Canada and not because of the WBNS increase. And the next station, WMBA, can go from its 0.5 kilowatts to 29 kilowatts. I mean, 2.9 kilowatts. It is limited by WBNS and another station, WJPA. WJCP can go to 9 kilowatts from its 1 kilowatt, and then it becomes limited of a further increase by WBNS. So that's how you read this table. At the bottom here, you will see a total. And this shows that we've got an increase of 8.1 million people under this, under the proposed rules, an increase on average of 319.6% of all the stations that we selected. So now this is a different study. We were asked to look at the 0.5 millivolt per meter, because if you're going to be protecting the 2 millivolt per meter, what's going to happen to, quote unquote, all that listenership out there in the 0.5? And that's a good question. How much listenership do you have in the 0.5 millivolt per meter? Well, with environmental noise and all of the issues that stations have of interference, how much do you have in the 0.5? Well, we did the study and found out that there was a lot of 0.5s that had holes in them from the pre-rules. So this is a study which looks at the 0.5 millivolt per meter contour and determines what happens to it when these power increases occur for the route stations. We only chose three stations from the route because this became a lengthy process and it wasn't written into the original agreement. So we had to extend the agreement for this. So what we're seeing here are the three stations that I talked about that are most closely affected. And in this column, we're looking at the 0.5 millivolt per meter interference-free. So we subtracted all the interference out. That was what took a long time. And looked at what would happen to their power, or to their coverage, rather, with an increase of, in this case, WBNS. Well, we found out that we'd have a reduction of the first adjacent station here by minus 2.8. And the route station, we call them route stations, these are the routes, would increase to its 43 kilowatts. Now, if you look down to the next one on your table, that's WBNS. So we're looking at WMBA. That's one of the affected stations. And in this case, remember they go from 5 kilowatts to 43 kilowatts, WBNS does. And the affected station, if it were just affected and it didn't do anything, would keep its 0.5 kilowatt, and it would reduce its 0.5 millivolt per meter interference-free by 26.3%. However, if they took advantage of their capability to increase their power, they would go from 0.5 to 2.9, and that would actually increase their interference-free 0.5 millivolt per meter by 90.4%. So in order for them to compete, they would have to increase power. So this begs the question of who does it first. So here's a summary. So the current 0.5 millivolt per meter population is 11.2 million in these all the stations that we looked at. And the 0.5 millivolt per meter after the roots stations increased their power dropped 12.7. So if they did nothing at all, the combination of all of them would lose an average of 12.7%. And then we looked at what would happen if they all increased after the fact, after the WBNS increased its power. And in fact, we found that they could go to 16.7 million. An increase of almost 50%. So that was kind of amazing to see that happen. Basically, you would be thinking not necessarily of an AM world where your 0.5 is your protected contour anymore. You'd be thinking about your AM is protected only to the 2 millivolt per meter. So what's the big deal about doing that? Well, that gives you the opportunity to provide city coverage within the 2 millivolt per meter, and you could move around within the city, and you would not have to, you'd have more flexibility because you wouldn't have to be protecting somebody else's 0.5 millivolt per meter, and they wouldn't have to be protecting yours. So you'd have much more flexibility to move a station, to keep them on the air with those new rules, including moving to multiplex on a tower. That's easier to do, and with the reduction in the efficiency requirement, that's even better. So you'd be able to increase your daytime power to serve a larger audience, and I mentioned you'd have more flexibility using shorter, less expensive towers, and you could reduce your power bill, and you can increase your nighttime power. So is this the elixir that we've been talking about that the FCC wants to do? Well, that's something you have to think about. Now, how much of the 0.5 millivolt per meter is out there doing a good job is the question. Have you ever tried to listen to a 0.5 millivolt per meter out in the sticks from your station? It's going to be real noisy. So how many people are listening to that with the competition with the other media? That's the question. So the other thing you can do is you can increase your power, but how much is that going to cost you? In many cases, the larger powers are going to require a new set of just about everything between the transmitter and the antennas. The ATU is going to have to be remodeled, and you're going to have to be dealing with higher power. That's a very costly project. And you'd have to do that just to compete, keep your existing area, and maybe increase it a bit. I had a client who called me up and said, I have a three-tower array, and it's been costing me much, much too much to keep it in shape and to keep it going. And the ground radials are starting to deteriorate, and can we go to one tower? And so I studied it for them. And the answer was, no, I'm sorry, you can't. You have to have this directional. There's just no way you can increase your power. Well, I went back and looked at it in terms of the rejuvenation rules, and yes, they could actually have a power increase and operate with one tower. So the small, in this particular case, operator, would have a significant advantage in some cases of not having to continue to support a costly directional array. So Class A's, you know, they're very much against this whole idea. They don't want to lose nighttime coverage. Their argument is that they provide a service that some people could not get otherwise. That was the original reason that the FCC protected the skywave of the Class A stations, because back in the early days of radio broadcasting, the rural communities really didn't have any choices, very little choice. And if you could get skywave out there, at least they could listen to that at night. But that's changed because there's quite a bit of new choices available, FM and all the other competing media that are out there. It does kind of ring the bell for having a window that's very fairly orchestrated by the FCC. And what is that? Is that a first come, first serve? I mean, all their windows are first come, first serve. So the people with the more money is that going to help the little guy? That's a good question. So our thinking is, and this was in the NAB comment, that if the commission does go forward with any of the proposed rules, that they find a way to do it in an equitable manner. So there were some additional proposals that were made as well. Remember, I was talking about the cross-service translators, and that they are limited to being within the 2 millivolt per meter or the 25-mile circle, whichever is the lesser. Well, the commission has proposed to change that, whichever is greater. If you recall back that WOI slide that we showed you, that station has a very large 2 millivolt per meter, so it would give them much more flexibility. Here in Wisconsin, Wisconsin Public Radio acquired an AM translator, but they were an FM translator for the AM station, but they wanted to cover a community that was fairly distant, and it was in fact outside of the 25-mile circle. So this would certainly help them because they could then move their coverage to serve the full city that they wanted to serve. So there's a lot of that going on. Some other aspects of the new proposals that the commission put forward was to modify the partial proof rules to reduce the number of radial measurements for directionals, and to modify the methods of moments proofs, which has really made it quite a bit easier to do a proof. The commission says, all right, for you dual expanded band stations that are still operating your expanded band facility and the facility that you told us you were going to turn off to go to the expanded band, you're going to have to choose one or the other. In my community in Iowa, we have one of those stations. And of course, they file comments opposing this. And they're talking about opening up the expanded band to additional applicants. They've even, I've heard, whispered that they might allow directionals in the expanded band. Currently, they do not allow that. And the other big one that they're thinking about is relaxing the main studio requirements. And for the small operator that has multiple stations in a given area, they're required under the current rules to basically have multiple studios unless they're within 25 miles of each other. And the new rules will reduce the distance requirements or somehow reduce the general requirements and allow one studio for a multitude of stations by one owner. So that's the portion of the slides, and I've got some time here for questions. If you have any questions or comments, microphones are out there, and question over here.
Thanks. What is being modified on the mom proof section? What's being discussed specifically?
On the
for mom proofs, for changes to mom proofs?
I really can't go tell you what that is because I don't have the docket with me. I frankly didn't anticipate the question, but they certainly made it a lot easier. If you're doing those kind of proofs, if you look at the docket, we can find out after the meeting. I have the docket on my computer. Yes.
Does the increases in power in these discussion and these appendices, and do they assume that the directional patterns of the stations are going to remain pretty much the same as they are, or is it going to mandate changing of the pattern?
Well, the tables showed you one or two stations that we did play around with a pattern, and we could actually get more power if we did that. In a couple of cases. Some cases it didn't matter. So because the sample was so small, I can't tell you how many there are going to be that way.
I was just confining my discussion to those that you presented, to the ones in the appendices right now.
So how many did we do?
No. I am confining my question to those stations which you have listed here in the appendices for now.
Only one, I think, or two of those stations were able to increase their directional antenna power. They were all able to increase, but if you made it directional, they could increase more. Is that what you meant?
Okay. That satisfies the question for now.
Okay. Back.
The commission has allowed translators to go on co-channels, which in some of the major markets, like in Las Vegas, is almost an impossibility. And their response is, even though they granted some of these CPEs, for the competitors to work it out with the competing channels. It's almost impossible. What were they thinking?
Well, it depends on the geography and what's happening to that code channel. And what it does is reduce the interference-free area of the translator. It doesn't cause interference over the whole area, but it causes interference in the area between the code channel and the translator. The translator would actually take the place of the signal in particularly close in. So it reduces the coverage that translator would have, and it may not make it useful in some cases. That's
what
you're
saying. My understanding is all you have to do is get one listener to write into the commission, and that would nix the signal for the FM translator.
Well, that's what I've heard is it was five, and I've helped some people with that, but you have to get five of them out there. And I know of a station manager that had a translator that was causing interference to his distant coverage, well beyond his protected contour, and it took him about 5 years in order to get it off the air. So it's going to take a long time. So, you know, I can't tell you what's behind some of these that are that choose a channel that has so much incoming interference. Our software will tell you how much interference is coming in as you look for a channel. And, you know, we tell our clients that that's not a good channel. Choose another one. Well, if there's only two to choose from, you're going to, in this case in Las Vegas, there's only two. You're going to choose one of them and hope it's the hope for the best.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug.